Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gildas Club have united to become the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 100 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. Well, hearing that you or someone you love has cancer can be overwhelming. Questions abound. Will I or my loved one survive? How will my family be affected? Will my insurance cover my care? Will I be able to work through treatment, or will I need to take time off from work? Will my family be burdened with huge expenses? For some, the questions come all at once. For others, they arrive one by one. Having a plan to deal with these questions is vital. It can be hard to ask for and accept financial help, much less know where to find this support during a difficult time. On this episode of Frankly Speaking About Cancer, we're taking a deep dive into this topic to find answers to these questions and many, many more. Joining us today to talk about what you need to know about the cost of cancer care is Amanda Holt. Amanda has almost 10 years of experience assisting patients with insurance optimization and advocating for alternative funding for treatments. She was hired in June of 2014 as the financial navigator and certified application counselor for Emory Regional Medical Center. There, she has played a major role in the development of their oncology assistance programs. In addition to her position at Emory Regional in April of 2016, she decided to take her passion for patient advocacy to the next level by becoming the financial specialist consultant for the cancer support community. Thanks for joining us, Amanda.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Good. We're going to jump right in because we have a lot of questions for you. But I would like our audience to get to know you a little bit. So before we dive into this sort of complex set of issues, let's start by talking about you a little bit. Can you tell us about the role that you play in helping people navigate the financial aspects of a cancer diagnosis?
Sure. Essentially, I'm a pivot point for our patients. Ideally, I meet them at the beginning of their treatment, provide them with general information, expectations, and then I follow them through their journey. We address issues when they come up, but upfront if possible at the time. And these are all financial issues that they may not know they might experience soon, or they may be already experiencing at this point of diagnosis.
So Amanda, how did you get started in your role with as a financial navigator with Emory Regional Medical Center and also with our Cancer Support Community Helpline?
You know, it's a funny story. A friend of mine actually referred me to the position. I worked in the home infusion industry, and I've always been somewhat, I would consider, a patient advocate in those roles that I played in home infusion. Through Emory Regional, once I interviewed and I got the job, this was a new program for them. This was a whole new concept. It was something that they actually contracted out with a company called 7X and the Nevectus mm-hmm. Group. And mm-hmm. that's where I met Dan German. So Dan actually stepped in and helped us implement our program here to advocate mm-hmm. for our patients, to focus on oncology. And then after a certain amount of time, it had been a year or so, Dan actually referred me over to the Cancer Support Community. Our program here has been very successful, and so I was excited to further that experience.
So, Amanda, from a broader perspective, before we drill down on some specific issues, but in both of these roles, what have you learned about the financial landscape facing people impacted by cancer? If you could sort of talk about it in broad strokes. I mean, is it a challenging situation? Are folks dealing with a pretty significant burden under a cancer diagnosis?
Wow, that's a loaded question. It's extremely complicated. yes, essentially the answer is yes. I mean, it's such a burden on not just the patient, but their families, their caregivers. And it's not just about addressing the cost of treatment either in a lot of cases. It incorporates cost of living and survival during the process.
What do you mean when you say that? Give us some examples.
So an example would be, let's say the person who's been diagnosed, let's say that person is head of household, carries the insurance on his or her family. At this point in time, depending on the significance of the diagnosis and the treatment plan, potentially whatever happens to the patient, whether they can continue to work or not, affects the entire family. So it could be catastrophic. And not only that piece of it, but, you know, having to come to treatments and schedule time off for work and still float your daily living is a challenge in itself.
Yeah, and I imagine, Amanda, that can lead to a whole host of other issues. So you're talking about sort of financial issues, financial challenges, but then that bleeds into everything. It bleeds into, you know, the ability to pay the mortgage, the ability to pay for basic needs that the family has. Does it add to the stress that the patient's feeling? I imagine that's probably not a good scenario.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the stress initially is the unknown. Obviously, mm-hmm. just not knowing what to expect. And I think that's where us as staff members, you know, we can provide some expectations and try to help relieve some of that stress, especially when it comes to the finances. I mean, whether we, you know, like to think of it this way or not, but, you know, money is our driver typically for our households, for our futures. So that is just the fact. So.
And I think we certainly know also that obviously, when a patient's dealing with a cancer diagnosis, dealing with treatment, we want them to have the best outcome. So I imagine the stress is probably not good for their cancer overall.
Absolutely not. I think there's some statistics out there that actually prove that we've actually measured that the higher level stress, you know, the less the stress, the more likely they are to recover, to feel better throughout the treatment. I mean, that's huge in itself.
Yeah, yeah. So, Amanda, just break down a little bit. I know that patients oftentimes have financial needs and concerns as it specifically relates to the diagnosis. So things like, I guess, like co-pays and out-of-pocket costs, cost sharing. And then they have financial worries and concerns for things like you mentioned, things like, you know, rent, things like parking, things like transportation. Can you just talk about those two sort of buckets of costs that patients are facing with a cancer diagnosis?
Absolutely, and I think you nailed it. One of the two things that the initial questions that I get from a patient who's a new diagnosis, a new consultation, is one, how much is this treatment going to cost me? Or mm-hmm. two, how am I going to afford to live while I'm going through treatment? So transportation is a big deal, especially when it comes down to radiation treatment. So if you have a type of cancer, you're going to receive daily radiation. Well, the radiation treatments themselves are kind of short appointments once you get on treatment, but you still have to be here every day, and depending on how far you live from the facility. So, yes, that's one of the first issues usually that's addressed. And there are foundations out there that assist with those issues, and we as a facility, we actually have our own foundation, and we assist with transportation as well. So, yes, that's a big one. Cost of treatment. Really, I think it's so important to understand your insurance benefits, the benefits that you have currently. You're right, your deductible, what is it? Your out-of-pocket, your co-pays, what's your co-insurance? So understanding the general breakdown of your insurance is so super important, I think, because that's a guide for how the rest of the financial situation is going to go.
Mm-hmm,
Yeah, and then there's also – go ahead.
Keep going.
There's also the daily needs. I mean, down to how am I going to afford groceries, or are there any assistance programs for groceries, our utilities. So then there are a lot of times people just want to know, how much are you charging my insurance? I think that seems like an odd concern, but that actually is a real concern that I hear on a daily basis.
Amanda, can you talk a little bit about the cost that patients have as it relates to their insurance? So can you just take a minute or two to explain what is a deductible, what is a copay, what are those costs, and are they only costs that relate to the person's medication, or do they relate to tests and office visits and things like that?
That's a great question, because it actually depends on the patient's insurance. Some employer coverage insurances could break down different types of benefits that apply to different types of procedures. But generally speaking, your deductible applies to most everything pertaining to cancer, treatment-wise. So you would start with your deductible. That's an amount that you have to meet before your insurance shares the cost with you. So your co-insurance is that cost, your share of it. So a typical policy will just say covers 80% of your charges after you meet your deductible. Well, you're responsible for 20%. And then once you meet a maximum out-of-pocket, that means your insurance will then pick up and actually assume the rest of the cost. So it's safe to say you typically on most policies have a maximum. So really, in all honesty, when we're quoting cancer treatment, it generally is more important to know what your out-of-pocket responsibility is versus what your actual cost of treatment is. And then in addition to that, to add to the complexities, there's generally a copay assigned to your office visits. And with oncology, there's a different copay for your specialists. And a specialist is generally, an oncologist is considered a specialist. So that's another increase every time you come in and see the physician on top of getting your treatment. So it's very important, I think, to understand, like you said, the breakdown of what all those components are. And that helps with the expectation of what the cost is going to be.
And Amanda, how does a person, if they don't know that information, how do they find out that information about their plan, about their policy?
Yeah, fantastic question. Generally, there are hospitals and facilities, cancer centers, all can work very differently. I think that you'll find that once you find out your diagnosis and you have your treatment options, that someone may reach out to you and actually give you that information. If not, then I would encourage you to reach out to your registration staff at the cancer center to talk to them, to call in and maybe even request a financial counselor. You can even talk to your HR person at work if you have employer covered benefits, or simply, I know we all stash it away in a drawer somewhere, but we generally get a book of information that talks about our insurance coverage when we sign up for our insurance. So it's one of those things, dust it off, pull it out, and try to go through that. And then I assume, and most people, it's going to take a one-on-one. So if you can get that person in person, conversation with someone at the center who can potentially help you with that, then I think that's probably a great idea.
Great. We're talking today about what you need to know about the cost of your cancer care. We have Amanda Holt with us today. She's a financial navigator. She spends her days working with cancer patients, helping them navigate through the complexities of the cost of care and paying for care and all that comes along with that. And we know in this day and age, it really is it's a maze. And so we certainly are appreciative that there are folks like Amanda who are out there. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We've got a lot more to discuss with Amanda, and we will be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The cancer support community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the cancer support community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com or call 617-733-5848. People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB. Or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo. Today's show is sponsored by AZI. We're joined by Amanda Holt, a financial navigator and counselor with the Cancer Support Community and Morey Regional Medical Center. Amanda, let's start off this segment by talking about what happens after someone receives an initial cancer diagnosis. One of the questions we hear most often when someone is newly diagnosed is, what do I do? What's next? And obviously, there's a lot that's going on with that patient as it relates to their treatment decision making, getting the proper diagnosis, getting a second opinion, figuring out a treatment plan. But can you provide some answers to that question, what's next, as it pertains to finances? And are there questions that patients should be asking really from the beginning?
Sure. And yeah, I think it starts with getting to know and understand their current state of coverage and then empowering them, like you said, by providing those options. And a lot of times the initial question is, I think we've covered this, but cost. And we can prepare for cost in many ways. We can talk about estimates. We can talk about the what if. But then really it's I get a lot of questions about my job. What am I going to do about my job? So I think at that point is when we address options with their employer. I encourage patients to talk to their human resources person to find out if you have a short-term disability policy. Do you have a long-term disability policy? Can you file for FMLA? What's COBRA? Those are things that I would actually really encourage everyone to write down. Those are vital questions when it comes to your employer when you're going through treatment. Besides that, though, I would suggest once you get face to face with someone that you can talk with, it's deciding what your current financial situation is also. And a lot of times, keep in mind it's not about what your financial situation has been as far as your income. Mm-hmm. It's more about what it's going to look like, what the future picture is going to look like. Instances such as if you were going to lose your insurance, that's a huge fear that I hear often. I can provide you with potential options, especially if I know what your income is going to look like in the next year or so. So thinking through those things and really empowering yourself by asking those questions and getting those answers, addressing transportation. That's something that your cancer center will hopefully be able to help you with as well.
And I know we're going to get into it, COBRA, in a minute, Amanda, but can you tell our listeners what FMLA is?
Yes, it's the Family Medical Leave Act is what that stands for. And FMLA is basically what would secure your position at your employer. Each employer, they can have slightly different rules that surround that, but typically FMLA lasts for 12 months, and it's something, it would probably be actually my first step with my employer, because you can be on FMLA in some cases, and depending on your employer's requirements, you could come and go back to work when you could or off when you could. It just depends on the situation, and everybody's situation is different. But FMLA is very important if you want to secure your position, especially if this is going to be a short-term recovery and treatment for you.
And I think what you said is important, Amanda. Everybody's situation is different, right? So we really need to drill down on your own personal situation, your coverage.
Absolutely.
Are you working? Are you retired? What does your insurance look like? You know, there's so much that we need to take in on an individual basis, which is one of the interesting things about healthcare today, right? I mean, if you and I were to walk into, you know, Best Buy to buy a TV, we both get the same price for the TV. But if we walked into get cancer care, we'd both be charged something different for that cancer care, right?
Absolutely.
So it's
you could receive the same treatment and it could be totally different.
Totally different, right? I know. And I know, Amanda, so like everybody's not as so lucky to have an Amanda. our patients at Cancer Support Community are, but I just want our listeners to know that there are oftentimes different folks in the hospital that are typically available to help patients learn more about managing the cost of their care. But sometimes there's little awareness of who to talk to and who can help me. So can you tell us who potentially the people are, what their roles are in the hospital, and you know, who can I ask to help me? And again, we want our listeners to know they shouldn't be afraid to ask, right? This is something that everybody is dealing with, and you should definitely, there are some places where you can get answers, right, Amanda?
Absolutely. And I strongly encourage, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I love that you touched on that, because behind the scenes, we're all talking, because no one's situation is the same. So as far as when I say we, the doctors and I, the front end staff and I, the registration folks, the nurses, we all talk. So the more questions you ask, I mean, believe me, behind the scenes, we're talking, trying to figure it out. So, and absolutely, every facility, you could have a financial navigator, you could have a financial counselor, you could have a patient advocate. Sometimes it might be a billing person assigned to these tasks to help with these alternative funding and answer these types of questions. It could be a pre-certification person. So I do encourage, ask questions. And a lot of facilities also, you have a nurse navigator. That's a new and upcoming position. And I think your nurse navigator is also a good place to start. And again, I encourage you to talk to your physician. Your physician also knows what opportunities are there for you in your facility.
And Amanda, aside from those resources inside of the hospital, aside from your insurance, if folks find themselves in a difficult situation, maybe they can't afford their, you know, the copay for their different medications, or they are struggling with some of their bills or things like that, are there resources outside of the hospital that folks can put their hands on to help them through that?
Absolutely. Great question. Yes, there are. There are so many. And if you get on the internet, you Google, you can get overwhelmed. I do think once you kind of know what your treatment options are, maybe even specifically down to what your medications are, or at least your diagnosis, there are search engines. One in particular, needymeds.com.
NeedyMeds.
Say that again. Is a search engine. NeedyMeds. It's N as in Nancy, EEDYMEDS.
Great.
NeedyMeds is a wonderful search engine site that will, you can search by your diagnosis, you can search by the medications you're receiving, whether they're oral or they're IV, it doesn't matter. So it's a good place to start. They'll pull up from that website the different foundations that you may qualify for. And aside from that, you can contact foundations directly. The Patient Advocate Foundation is huge. It's copays.org. is their website, And they if they don't have an opportunity to assist you, they will actually refer you over to other foundations that may have open funding, may have a different opportunity for you. So it's a huge network, and I encourage you just to put your feelers out, reach out, because you never know. There's places like RX Assist. If you have oral medications, not just pertaining, not just specifically your chemo, but maybe other things that come along with your disease, that's another search engine that can help and assist and push you towards those directions.
And I just want to tell our listeners, Amanda, that the Cancer Support Community, we have a great booklet about, you know, frankly speaking, about cancer. It's about coping with the cost of care. And many of these resources that you're outlining on the show today are listed in that booklet, the copay assistance foundations, the pharmaceutical support programs, and other resources. So if folks go to cancersupportcommunity.org, they can download that booklet for free, our Coping with the Cost of Care booklet. I know we're putting a lot of alphabet soup out there to our listeners today, and we want to make sure we're directing them to some places where they can put their hands on some of these much-needed resources. Amanda, how does a patient's diagnosis and treatment plan influence the cost of their care? For example, you mentioned, am I going to get an oral medication or am I going to get an IV medication? Is the cost going to be different for me, whether I have an oral or an IV? Is the cost different for me if I need chemotherapy versus radiation? You know, how do patients really think about some of those issues or anticipate some of that?
Absolutely. Cost of care is going to determine whether also if you have a short-term treatment or a long-term treatment. Obviously, that will affect long-term how much you end up out of your pocket. But you're right. Your treatment plan could include oral chemo, and you might not ever have to really come into the cancer center. But at that point, the oral medications are typically covered under your drug coverage, whether that be for commercially insured patients or if you have a Medicare plan or a Medicaid plan, it's covered under your drug card. So those benefits are entirely different. And especially if you're in the Medicare population, those are, we get into a whole other animal, really. You have a very high out-of-pocket cost, really kind of regardless what you do. So, yes, that's different. And then, of course, cost is different if you are getting IV chemotherapy or if you're getting radiation therapy in the center. Radiation actually, in my experience, can be even higher than chemotherapy. And there's actually, it's more cumbersome as well in cost, because that's usually the type of treatment where you have to drive to the clinic every single day. So that can vary greatly depending on what you get.
So I think it's important, for our listeners to know that every case is going to be different. We're trying to give some general answers, responses, and guidelines, but that every person, their situation is going to be different. Just quickly, we're just getting to a break here. So just quickly, Amanda, how important is it for the patient to really speak up with the doctor, with the nurse, with the team about their financial concerns?
The more you stay in communication, constant communication with your physician, the more it helps the entire staff plan and navigate through your treatment. So I stress that's very important. Our doctors here, they'll call me if there's a financial issue. We walk through the clinical perspective and the financial perspective to help offer you the best type of care. And we can't do that without, you know, you letting us know and staying in contact with us on what your situation is. I think that's very important.
I do. I agree. It's so critical. We want folks to know, look, these are common challenges. You are not alone in facing these challenges. You're not alone in being concerned about the money. So, speak up and let's help you get connected to the resources that are out there to navigate these difficult issues. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. We are talking to Amanda Holt, a financial navigator, about really understanding the cost of your cancer care. And we're talking about some tools and resources to navigate those costs. Don't go away. We've got a lot more to discuss, and we will be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the Eisai Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com. Or call 617-733-5848.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
We're back with Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's show is sponsored by Eisai. We're joined by Amanda Holt, a financial navigator and counselor with the Cancer Support Community and with Maury Regional Medical Center. In this segment, Amanda, I really want to get into some of the nitty gritty of this topic. And I know it's a little bit complicated, but I think we have to, you know, really for our listeners, talk about some of the different options that we're discussing here. So let's start by talking about some of the different payment options available. We'll start with general options. I'm going to throw out a couple of different terms. I want you to define each of these for me and explain how they work and, you know, really when they are necessary options to employ. So let's start with COBRA. What is COBRA and how is that used?
So essentially, COBRA is your employer, your insurance that you have through your employer at the point of termination or separation from your employer, they offer to let you keep your plan. COBRA is simply the term that means that you will pay your full premium, that your employer is no longer contributing to your premium. So generally, that can double, triple, even quadruple, in some cases, what you pay to keep your insurance. The reason we stress on this is not the importance of just the lapse in coverage. If you lose your insurance, you're not able to afford COBRA, but if you move to a different insurance at that point in time, and let's say you're halfway through the year, then you've already paid your deductible and out-of-pocket with your COBRA insurance or your employer insurance, and then you're going to start over with a new insurance, and you're going to be even more out of your pocket. So in those cases, that's why we stress it's so important if you can keep your COBRA. But essentially, that's what it is. It's your full premium to keep your insurance from your employer.
So the benefit is your employer is, if they've been providing insurance for you, they're required by law to offer that to you, but you have to pay the full amount yourself. So the upside is you can continue to have access to insurance and coverage and continuous coverage through your same insurer because you've already paid those copays and things and deductibles and things like that. But the downside is it's going to be a lot of money. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Put it down on paper and weigh your odds. The COBRA, if you look at your premiums, even though your premiums go up, you are saving yourself an additional deductible and out of pocket. And these are kind of the things that we try to navigate through. Mm-hmm. Let's say you dropped your COBRA insurance and let's say you picked up a marketplace plan at that point. Mm-hmm. You're going to start over with a deductible. You're going to have a premium for that. Once you add all that up, you could potentially mm-hmm. be paying the same amount you would be if you mm-hmm. kept your COBRA premium.
So basically, you got to take it on this. You got to ask these questions before you make any decisions, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
And when you say marketplace, that's the Affordable Care Act. That's what we sometimes refer to as Obamacare when you say marketplace coverage, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, great. Just so our listeners have our terms, right? Because it is a bit of an alphabet soup here. That's the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. Okay, covered COBRA. Tell us a little bit about short-term disability. What is it? How do I know if I have it and how do I access it?
So short-term disability is typically, it's another one of those things that it's a benefit from your employer. You would access it by probably talking to your benefits person in your HR department. That would be the first point of contact, I'd suggest. But it's going to be short-term, just as it says. It's only going to be a few weeks. You'll be paid from your employer, so it's extended vacation, basically. And typically, it's at a lower percentage of your pay. Example, you would only get 60% of your pay through those short weeks. And then after that, potentially, your employer could also offer a long-term disability. It works generally the same way. You get a percentage of your pay. It's just an extended leave. Also, at that point, depending on your employer, is when your insurance may turn over to COBRA or you may get to keep it. So those things are important to consider for that too. But it's extended vacation time. And mm-hmm. it can be, and most employers will allow you to do this on top of taking your FMLA, so your position's protected, you have your short term, and it would allow you just some time even to kind of figure out what the plan is at that point.
So some opportunities to kind of layer some of these things on top of each other to get you some extended, at least partial coverage. And then what about, what is Social Security disability insurance? Obviously, when we think of Social Security, right, that's the money that we've been putting away, you know, through our paycheck that when we're 62 or 65 or 67, we can start collecting Social Security. But what is Social Security disability insurance?
So there can be, it's definitely one of those things that I think there is lack of understanding with Social Security disability. It can be temporary. And Social Security disability is something that you could apply for even if you're receiving short-term or long-term disability from your employer. Those are two different things. Social Security disability is essentially for folks who are going to be disabled based on their diagnosis, based on what's going on for at least over a year. And it's something that you apply for straight with the Social Security office on your own, or you can actually hire an attorney to assist you with that process. Here at our facility, we actually have an employee here who is responsible for coordinating those efforts with the patient and helping the patient gather all of your medical records. It's a very extensive process, and there can be very long waiting times. I do really want to stress that there is an option to have an attorney to help you through that process, to help you with all of the lingo and the letters that you'll receive from the Social Security Administration. But also want to tell you that there's two different types of Social Security disability. Both types do actually, you get income with both. There's SSI and SSDI. SSDI, mm-hmm. they're basically determined based on your assets. So if you have liquid assets, such as like a 401k or an IRA, things like that, Social Security disability, SSDI, is probably going to be the option for you. And what that means is you'll be approved based on the date you were deemed disabled. You'll receive income from your Social Security disability, and you'll also receive Medicare 2 years and 5 months down the road from your approval. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's also, and I know I'm throwing a lot of terms out here. There's also it's a lot. And that's kind of that. I think that's part of stressing the complexity of all this too. But there's SSI is your other option for Social Security disability. And that option, if you have less assets, that option will come with income and immediate insurance in most cases. So that's why, and that's one of those layers like you said earlier, that we can add in from the very beginning as we're working on everything else, knowing that it's going to take some time. So don't be discouraged, I'd like to say, in applying for Social Security disability, even if you are receiving other pay, other income from other sources, because if you're not planning on going back to work in more than a year, or your physician lets you know that you may not ever, then that is definitely something I would encourage you to pursue.
Amanda, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, I mean, obviously there's a lot of debate in this current political climate. Can you just tell us a little bit about how the Affordable Care Act has affected the cancer space, the cancer conversation, the cost of cancer care? I know that one of the things that a lot of cancer patients experience was that they couldn't get coverage because they had cancer, what's often referred to as a pre-existing condition. I know that the Affordable Care Act eliminated the ability to discriminate against those folks with a pre-existing condition. Other ramifications of the Affordable Care Act and potentially if it's repealed or replaced?
You know, bottom line is the Affordable Care Act did provide another option for our patients. Mm-hmm. And it has been a great option because it's actually kept some families from reaching a catastrophic level of debt. I can't really speak to repeal and replace because we don't really have a plan yet.
But I know there's a lot of will to keep in that pre-existing condition.
And the pre-existing condition for the cancer community is definitely a huge focus because obviously that's going to affect their ability to get insurance. And it's not just people who are, you know, without a job and self-pay. It's for our small employers as well who don't have the ability to offer their employees insurance. So,
Amanda, we know that Medicare is essentially coverage for those who are 65 and older. Again, we've sort of paid into that system over the course of our working lives. Just a minute. We've got another minute or so until our next break here, but can you also just explain for a minute or two about Medicaid? Again, Medicare for seniors 65 and over. Medicaid is for those who are lower income. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So we have 19 states at this point in time who have not expanded their Medicaid program. And basically what that means is Medicaid is not in every state. It doesn't include people who are just low income. So you have to meet a specific category in order to get into the Medicaid program. Medicare is for 65 and older, but also for those who are approved for Social Security disability in some cases. I'd like to give a great example of cancer and the different categories of Medicaid can work. It's a very unique situation, and it happens more than you would think. So I have a patient who I sat down with. He had no insurance. He's got leukemia, and his family is of course dealing with the devastation of diagnosis and what am I going to do about treatment and how are we going to afford it? Well, there was some pharmaceutical company assistance available for him, and through conversations and filling out the application, I found out that he has minor children at home. So that qualified him for Medicaid. That's one of those categories. So that's another also example of communicating with your staff and knowing these things because it may not be relative to cancer, but on the spot, I was able to help him with Medicaid and get his treatment covered.
So you got to talk about what's going on at home. You got to talk about your family. You got to talk about your employment situation. You got to talk about you know, what do you have in savings? You got to talk about all these things and don't be shy about doing that because it's really going to matter. And the more we know, the more we can help you get the best care that's out there and get you connected to those resources. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We've got more to discuss with Amanda after the break. Amanda Holt, a financial counselor with us today. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Steps to a Healthier You. Voice America Health and Wellness.
I'm Bill Schaefer, and this is today's Cancer in the News. Regular exercise can reduce a woman's risk of cancer, but the benefits may be diminished if she gets too little sleep, researchers said on Monday. The study involving 5,968 women confirmed previous findings that people who do regular physical activity are less likely to develop cancer. but when the researchers looked at the women ages 18 to 65 who were in the upper half in terms of the amount of physical exercise they got per week, they found that sleep appeared to play an important role in cancer risk. Researchers discovered that those who slept less than 7 hours nightly had a 47% higher risk of cancer than those who got more sleep among the physically active women. While additional studies need to be done to clarify how getting too little sleep may make one more susceptible to cancer, there is no question that getting adequate sleep has been long associated with health. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention calls sleep loss an unrecognized public health problem, saying Americans are getting less and less slumber. The CDC said the percentage of adults reporting sleeping 6 hours or fewer a night increased from 1985 to 2006. Sleep experts say chronic sleep loss is associated with obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke, cardiovascular disease, depression, cigarette smoking, and excessive drinking. In addition, research has shown that people who get regular exercise have a reduced risk of breast, colon, and other types of cancer. Experts think the effects of exercise on the body's hormone levels, immune function, and body weight may play an important role. In other news, scientists say drugs used to control diabetes may lower the risk of prostate cancer. Recent studies have reported a decreased prostate cancer risk for diabetic men, although it is currently unclear whether use of antidiabetic medication affects the association between diabetes and prostate cancer. Researchers studied a group of men that were diagnosed with prostate cancer and a group of control men without prostate cancer. The total number of subjects comprised nearly 50,000 individuals. Oral diabetes drugs were used by 7.5% of the men with prostate cancer and by 8.4% of controls. The prevalence of insulin use was 2.5% in the cases and 3% in the controls. Men who had a history of taking any diabetes medication had a 16% lower risk of prostate cancer. The decreased risk was comparable for all anti-diabetic drugs, including metformin and insulin. The investigators found that the overall risk, as well as the risk of advanced prostate cancer, decreased with the amount and duration of medication use. While the potential mechanism behind decreased prostate cancer risk for diabetic men is currently unclear, it is very likely that the changes in endogenous hormone metabolism occurring in diabetes have an important role. I'm Bill Schaefer, and that's today's Cancer in the News.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com. Or call 617-733-5848.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
We're back with Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's show is sponsored by AZI. We're closing out the show with Amanda Holt, a financial navigator and counselor with Maury Regional Medical Center and with the Cancer Support Community. Amanda, we're getting to the end of the show. Again, I feel like we could talk for 3 hours and not even scratch the surface on these complex topics. But, you know, what advice do you have for people who feel like they've just exhausted all of their resources? They don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. It can be so overwhelming. People tell me they feel like they're just drowning with some of these issues and some of the burden of the finances of cancer care. What should they do?
So, first of all, Kim, I think it's an opportunity to reflect, stay positive, and again, stay in contact with your point people at your facility. But as complex as the situation is, I think reminding them to focus and keep things as simple as possible is important. Trying previous options again, is never a bad thing to do. Even if, you know, you're reapplying for the same thing, I think that there are probably questions that we're going to ask that you don't realize about your situation that has actually changed. So there's nothing wrong with starting over back to the basics and trying again, but stay positive, get plugged in. Some of your groups, there are support groups that are offered at your cancer facility. You never know what you'll find out on a peer-to-peer level with networking with the people in your support group. There's a lot of local assistance out there that's not heavily advertised. There's a lot of community assistance. So, and on top of that, I think that there are several times that I've simply just sat down with a patient who seems so overwhelmed, and I think it's really because they keep getting those bills in the mailbox, and it can come down to something as simple as organization. Mm-hmm. So I think having, if you're a spreadsheet person, if you want to write it down, if you want to put them in a notebook or a folder, I think keeping those bills organized together, and if you don't understand something, make sure you ask questions. But I think that's a huge stressor for a lot of patients because there are so many different places that these bills are coming from. It could be lab companies, your doctor, the facility itself. So yeah, Stay organized as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Amanda, you know, I love hearing some of the stories. So give us another success story. You know, tell us about a patient there that you may have helped, and again, by them sharing some information or, you know, revealing some of the details of their situation, that you were able to connect them with some resources and get them some help.
Sure. You know, this morning I walked in to one of those success stories. A patient came to me in December of 2014. It was shortly after I took this position, and she had ovarian cancer. She worked at a part-time job, no insurance. Her husband worked, but his employer did not offer spouse coverage under the policy. So she's completely uninsured at this point. Well, we were we started actually with hospital financial aid. So I helped her with our financial aid that we offer, our charity program. And then very, very shortly after she started, there was the ACA Marketplace open enrollment. So we were able to enroll her into an insurance, and simultaneously during all this, we helped her file for Social Security disability. Well, now here we are 2 years down the road, and this morning when I said hello to her, she said, "I just want you to know I'm so excited. You know, it's been 2 years. I've kept my Marketplace plan." Her plan cost her $20 a month to have to cover her cancer treatment. And she was approved for Social Security disability, so she got her income during that time as well. So it kept them afloat. And then now she's at the point of her Medicare. Now that she's on disability, her Medicare is kicking in. We were able to talk over the last couple of years about what her options were when she got her Medicare. She now has Medicare and a Medigap plan. She has 100% insurance coverage. So wow. She informed me of that when I walked in this morning. And I was so excited to hear that. But that's a great example of her. That's a long time. We worked together for a long time, and it was a very good success story on her part. So
again, just reminding folks, you've got to just open your mouth. You got to tell people what's going on. You know, you've got to talk to your medical team. You know, they at least will have some sense of some of the resources that are out there to help you. Amanda, earlier in the show, you threw out a couple websites. Can you talk about those again as we get to the end of the show? A couple of those websites and places where folks can go to look for some of that support and information?
Absolutely. The Patient Advocate Foundation, it's copays.org. And they are, it is as it suggests, they're an advocacy foundation that they'll help you in some instances with copays, help you with the cost of your treatment. And if they can't help you, they're really great about forwarding your information on or forwarding you on to another local organization or a national organization that may be able to help you. There is the PAN Foundation, Patient Access Network Foundation, and they can be found online also, the panfoundation.org. They have an array of different diagnoses, specific medications that they help cover. They also help with transportation. There's also cancercare.org. They help with transportation, and they will also triage you to other different organizations if needed. The Health Well Foundation, Leukemia Lymphoma Society, Needy Meds, PPARX, which is Prescription for Partnership Assistance.org. There's RxAssist.org. And I think if you start in one of those places, again, I want to stress that Needy Meds is a great search engine. If you start in one of those places, it's kind of going to lead you down the path to your next steps and on to the next person. And again, as Kim mentioned earlier, the cancer support community, our website offers information, disease-specific, just general information about your disease, I think is really great. I actually refer to it on a regular basis. And then they have great, frankly speaking, about cancer tools, resources to use to write down questions for your physician, because if you don't write them down, if you're anything like me, I know you'll forget. So those are just to name a few, and I know that's a lot, but there actually is a lot of assistance out there.
Yeah. We've got about a minute left, Amanda. Any last takeaways or tips for our listeners today?
I want to re-stress getting plugged in. I know that we've said that over and over, but I really don't feel like I can stress it enough. And support groups. Our facility, I know, offers support groups, and I know that there are various facilities that do, and even support groups that aren't associated with your facility. There's Gilda's Club, if you have one in your area. So I really stress getting plugged in. And also, please share your success stories and even the unsuccessful stories, because that's how we all learn how to help you. And I learn from our patients. That's how I learn every day. I learn from our patients, and they all teach me something new every day. So please share. We want to hear.
It's great advice, Amanda. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's a really important issue. It can be so daunting, so complex, such a maze, and you've really helped shed some light on the resources available to patients and families. And to all of our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us today for Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau from the Cancer Support Community. At the Cancer Support Community, we do provide a multitude of in-person, online, and over-the-phone support. If you or someone you know is faced with a cancer diagnosis, you do not have to face cancer alone. Visit us on our website at cancersupportcommunity.org. As Amanda said, we've got a ton of great resources online. Everything is free. You can also call our helpline and talk to folks like Amanda, talk to social workers, other counselors who have great expertise. Call us at 888-793-9355. If you're grabbing a pen, I'll say it again, 888-793-9355 to speak with a counselor. And again, we'd like to invite you to join our advocacy network at CSCAdvocate.org and to join our Cancer Experience Registry and share your voice with us at CancerExperienceRegistry.org. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.